to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. A small community in Australia is becoming more inclusive of people with dementia. An award-winning project is bringing together dementia sufferers and other locals to raise awareness and find ways to make the town more dementia-friendly. Here, I'd like to share with you this postcard from Australia. Council worker Darren Brennan sets off on another journey in Kiama, just south of Sydney. He was out on the road in the early hours one morning this winter when he spotted an older man, cold and clearly disoriented. Brennan realized the man was likely suffering from dementia, and because of his own experience with the illness, he knew how best to help.
Well, I knew not to approach him and scare him. I did have a nan who had dementia, so I sort of had a good understanding of it.
This is the kind of understanding now being promoted on a large scale here in Kiama. The coastal town has become a popular retirement area, attracting a large community of older people. The Dementia-Friendly Kiama Project brings together dementia patients and other locals to raise awareness of sufferers' needs. The project is training locals to be dementia friends, teaching them about what dementia is and how it affects people's lives. Professor Richard Fleming is a psychologist specializing in dementia from the University of Wollongong.
What we're seeing here is one of Australia's first efforts at developing a truly dementia-friendly community.
It includes assisting companies and the local council to modify spaces to make them more accommodating. Simple signs help explain where to go and what's happening. Robin Fairburn frequently finds herself getting disoriented and often can't remember how to unlock doors in public toilets. Her husband and carer, Grimm, says a simple sign explaining how the lock works can make all the difference.
I think it's a great sign because it actually gives you instructions in simple words about how to be secure. You can lock the door, but you're not going to get locked in because, again, it tells you how to get out when you need to get out. And it's straightforward.
Those behind the project say there's one thing that really sets it apart. Nick Guggisberg is the council's community and cultural development manager.
The main difference has been to have people with dementia really actively at the heart of the project, identifying what are the issues, what would make a difference to their lives.
Earlier, the project won the Excellence in Community Partnerships Award at Australia's National Disability Awards. Kiama has become a community that learns from the people it serves. You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. They say laughter is the best medicine, and a type of yoga is proving just that. Every Monday, a group of people gather in Beirut to practice laughter yoga, which they say not only improves their mood, but also has significant health benefits. Here's Yang Yong with this postcard from Lebanon.
Very good!
Very good! Yeah!
The people at the special yoga session already have smiles on their faces. That's because this is the happiest hour of the week, a class of laughter yoga. They clap as their instructor, Rula Abd El-Baghi, enters the room, then follow her as she starts the session. Laughter yoga began in the mid-1990s and involves prolonged voluntary laughter. Founder Munden Kataria, an Indian doctor, claims laughing has both physical and psychological benefits, whether it's spontaneous or not. Raising their arms, clapping, and taking deep breaths before starting to laugh. This laughter yoga class in Beirut attracts people of all ages.
The benefits of laughter yoga are many. It relieves stress in the body,
It improves the flow of oxygen to the brain. It improves sleep. It improves the mood, the number of endorphins increase, which fights illness. It makes us happy. With every laugh from the belly, you lose 3.5 calories, and it's like Botox for the girls.
Whether or not you believe all of Albert Elbaggi's claims, laughter yoga certainly involves lots of movement and physicality, as well as simply letting out a good belly laugh. Laughter is also a universal language with a few cultural barriers. The trainers here are certainly impressed with the effects, and it seems they enjoy letting their hair down together. Kosa Shaja is a participant.
Laughter yoga makes us happy and we forgot all our issues and ourselves.
Another participant, Nisri Modia, says the benefits improve with practice.
Each session becomes better and better, and we laugh more and more. There is happiness and love for our bodies, and the happiness hormones increase.
And it's not just Lebanon where laughter yoga is attracting a following. Laughter yoga clubs are fast growing into a worldwide community which believes in the benefits of laughter, love and fellowship.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A new global initiative is aiming to reform the world's fishing industry to make it more transparent and sustainable. One of the first countries to sign up was Mauritania, which relies heavily on fishing for jobs and food. Here's Shane Bigham with this postcard from Mauritania.
Fishermen bring their catch back to the beach in Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania, on Africa's west coast. Others are heading out to sea in their pirogues, or small wooden canoes. Hundreds of these boats line the beach, where small-scale fishermen try to make a living every day. The fishing industry is a key part of the local economy, but there aren't as many fish in the sea as there used to be. The boats must go farther out to sea and fish for longer to net ever smaller catches, according to the Fisheries Transparency Initiative. The initiative was launched with the aim of making the global fishing industry less secretive and more sustainable. Overfishing, climate change, and damage to ecosystems are all having a negative impact on fish stocks around the world. Fishermen here blame the big boats operated by foreign fishing fleets, who they say take too many fish and damage the local ecosystem. Baro Diop is a local fisherman.
There are big boats that stop here coming from the sea, big trawlers that destroy the seagrass, and the seagrass these trawlers destroy is where the fish live. If this grass disappears, then the fish too will disappear.
The fishermen aren't the only ones who rely on the sea to make a living. At the fish market in Nouakchott, stallholders sell their morning's catch while others work in the processing plant scraping scales off the fish. Keeping the seas healthy and well-stocked is important to the future of the local economy.
Generations and generations will come after us. It's true, we are done now. But we want our children and grandchildren to find something better. We want those fishermen to live better than us.
According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the fishing industry amounts to between 4 and 10% of Mauritania's GDP, which is equivalent to a quarter of the government's budgetary resources. The FAO says important stocks such as sardinella and octopus are currently being overexploited. Peter Eigen, the founder of the global anti-corruption organization Transparency International, is also the chair of the International Advisory Group of the Fisheries Transparency Initiative. He says the initiative brings together national governments, companies, and civil society organizations to try to make fishing more transparent and protect the world's fish stocks.
I have experienced with my own groups and seen with my own eyes how the combination of the wisdom and the strengths and the objectivity of this combination, of this magical triangle of government, civil society, and private sector, can really achieve tremendous improvements. They can together move mountains, and this is what I'm hoping we can also do in the fisheries sector here in Mauritania, but also worldwide.
The Fisheries Transparency Initiative aims to put pressure on countries to tackle the problem of confidential fishing contracts, which make it impossible to see which companies have which fishing rights and how much they cost. Jacqueline Alders, a branch chief in the Fisheries and Aquaculture Department at the FAO in Rome. She says the FAO is in favor of the Transparency Initiative, but warns the situation is often complex.
Yeah, there are some countries that coastal communities are struggling, but it's a complex situation in that some of the industrial fisheries that we are talking about actually employ many coastal people in the post-harvest processing, working on ships. So FAO is quite keen on the Transparency Initiative because it'll help us find the balance between small-scale fisheries and what their needs are, and what we need to do in terms of allocating resources so that the commercial fishing or the industrial fishing is also profitable and we have decent employment or decent work for these coastal communities.
Alder says improving cooperation between all the different players in the global fishing industry will make it easier to monitor what's happening in the world's fish stocks.
The Fishing Transparency Initiative will help to improve governance by looking at who has the right to fish, how much it costs to fish, and how much they catch. That information is important for us to know how much of the resource is available and how to allocate that resource between industrial and small-scale fisheries.
So far, Mauritania, Senegal, and Indonesia have signed up to the initiative, which has no powers to force countries to join. Once governments have signed up, however, they must stick to a set of mandatory requirements to gather and disclose information about their fishing industries.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. The concept of a basic income or a citizen's wage is not new, but is gaining some momentum worldwide. A private organization in Germany is now running a crowd-funded trial giving people a basic income for a year. They want to test the concept to see if it could work on a larger scale. Here's Chen Ting with this postcard from Germany.
What would you do if you received 1,000 euros unconditionally every month for a year? Judith Menzo, a 29-year-old cafe owner in Rostock, Germany, has just won just that. She runs a cafe selling vegan ice cream, not a big seller in the cold winter months. When she won the income in a December 2015 draw, she says her initial feeling was one of relief.
Cool, my personal life is secured. Now I can focus on the running of the cafe.
She says spending the money is not a problem.
I use the money very specifically on paying the rent on my flat, my private health insurance, and then there's a bit left for normal shopping like food for my dog and a bit of food for myself. But then it's gone.
The private organization behind the project wants to know what it would be like if everyone in Germany got this basic income every month for a year. Michael Bollmeier, a 31-year-old startup entrepreneur, founded the organization Mein Grundeinkommen, which means my basic income, in 2014. After leaving the day-to-day management of his company, an online sales portal for car plates, he himself got a monthly profit share of a little under 1,000 euros without having to do any work. That got him thinking about what it meant to have an unconditional basic income and how it can change people's lives.
Also für mich kann ich sagen, ich funktioniere besser, wenn ich Dinge mache.
I know that I myself work better when I do things, because I want to do them rather than because I have to do them. And I can imagine that this is the case with many other people. That's why an unconditional basic income is a good idea, because it takes the must out of the work. It gives people a way to live a life of possibilities. And on this basis, they can ask, what am I actually good at and what can I contribute to society?
The project is fully crowdfunded, with 5 euros out of every 6 euros donated directly to funding the 12,000 euro basic incomes for a year. Baumeier says that the basic income awarded in this type of sweepstake does not need to be taxed under German law. That means the entire income goes directly to the winners. So far, more than 34,000 people have donated money to fund basic incomes for 29 people. Each month, a draw is organized where the winners are picked from the around 66,000 people that have applied for the income online. Anyone in Germany can apply, and it doesn't cost anything. The organization just asks people to stay in contact and share stories about how the income changed their lives or not.
Also unsere Gewinnenden werden per Zufall ausgelost und wie der Zufall so ist.
The winners are chosen through a draw, and like always when chance is involved, they're all very different. We have pensioners, students, workers, unemployed, children, really all types of people. And all of them say, independently of each other, that they sleep better.
According to Baumeier, only one of the 29 winners has quit his or her job, but only to start an education. The others say they can focus more on side projects, spend more time on their hobbies, and worry less about money. On the streets of Berlin, people have no problems coming up with ideas of how to spend an extra income.
1,000 euro jeden Monat extra.
1,000 euros extra every month. That would be really nice. More shopping, more clothes, more shoes.
Also, irgendwie sinnvoll nutzen, ein bisschen Spaß.
I would do something meaningful and I would save some daily costs and then enjoy life and work less.
Ja, also ich würde auf jeden Fall mehr Sachen machen, die auf meiner To-Do-List.
I would definitely do some stuff that is on my to-do list, like bungee jumping or parachuting, or travel to the Great Wall of China. That's what I want to do.
There are many different ideas for how a basic income would work on a national scale. Most concepts envisage the basic income acting as an unconditional safety net rather as an additional income. Employed people would have the income included in their regular wage, but if they became unemployed or decided to leave work, the unconditional income would give them enough money to survive and perhaps start their own companies or projects. Baumeier believes such concepts are not just a good idea, they are necessary to avoid mass poverty in the future.
Also die Arbeitswelt, wie sie heute kennen, ist dabei, sich massiv zu...
The labor market that we know is changing dramatically because of digitalization. Many jobs that we consider safe today will soon disappear. Machines are getting cheaper and better at taking over jobs. For as long as people have to work, they will have to compete with machines. And in the end, people are going to lose. So it is urgently needed to divorce work from income to avoid mass unemployment and mass poverty.
There is no broad political support for basic income in Germany, with the two largest parties against the idea. But in other countries, such as Finland and the Netherlands, there is more support. Finland is planning on running a small trial project in 2017, in which some people would receive an unconditional income instead of welfare payments. Switzerland will have a national referendum on the issue in 2016. Victor Steiner, professor in economics at the Freie University in Berlin, has researched the concept of a basic income or citizen's wage. He says there could be a social impact, such as a further increase in immigration or some people deciding not to join the workforce. In terms of affordability, it would be possible but expensive.
Also wir haben dieses Bürgergeldkonzept eben gerade
because of the increased interest worldwide. We have recently analyzed the concept of a citizen's wage from a scientific angle. It is often claimed that it is not possible to finance it. But what we found is that it is possible to finance such a concept. It would, however, mean a much higher tax rate.
Bollmeyer's project is now expanding globally. A crowd-funded project in the US, inspired by the German project, has just raised enough for its first year-long basic income. So what will it be? Quit your job? Study? Or just sleep better? With a bit of luck, perhaps you might find yourself making that decision one day.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A former World War II veteran has celebrated his 100th birthday wish with 100 women. During the Second World War, the British Army officer told fellow officers he wanted to have 100 women help him celebrate his centenary if he ever got there. Now, living in Australia and celebrating his 100th year, the local community have granted his wish. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Australia. It's always been Doug Cunningham's wish to reach 100 years of age. As they prepare for battle in the Second World War, he asked his troops what they would do if they survived.
And then one chap at the back of the hall stood up and said, "Excuse me, sir, what do you want to do when the war ends?" And I sat back in my chair and thought. I said, "Well, I hope I can live to be 100. And I want 100 girls at that do."
He survived the war and eventually moved to Swansea near Newcastle in Australia, where he now cherishes every day. After 100 years, he's got a simple philosophy for living well. Enjoy life, use your brain, don't look at television too often, and go out and meet people. It was a chance conversation at the local supermarket that helped make his wartime wish a reality.
One of the girls spoke to me one day and said, "How old are you?" And I told her. She said, "You'll soon be 100. I said, "Yes, and I hope 100 girls come to the party." And they just took that and said, "Well, let's see if we can find 100 girls interested in having a party." And that's how it started.
And he had no trouble getting the numbers. Here are two ladies at the party.
He's such a ladies' man, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I call him Swansea's biggest gentleman. Women is his secret to long life.
Yes, and that's why he wanted 100 women here today.
Yes.
And that's why we're here. Yes. And he is adorable and so handsome.
Happy birthday to you.
And another surprise, a birthday song fit for a president. The proper way to celebrate the life of a much-loved local hero. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.